हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिः 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 ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So then we were discussing that liberation means you're free from material consciousness. So ultimate liberation means to be completely free from the Purusha Bhav. But even if you're not free from the Purusha Bhav, if you're free from material consciousness, then you'll get out of the material world. But you can't get into the spiritual world until you get rid of the tendency to control and enjoy. Okay, so we're reading, yes. The jiva's consciousness under the covering of the material circumstances is pervertedly reflected. Due to this, he is entangled in the actions and reactions of his own karma. One must become free from this bodily concept of life. The living entity, being part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, is neither the creator nor the enjoyer, but a cooperator. The relationship is like that of master and servant. If the master is satisfied, then the servant is satisfied. In pure consciousness, the activity will be dovetailed with Krishna, and that will make one really happy. These purified activities, called bhakti, are transcendental to the three modes of nature. Srimad Bhagavatam defines, Muktir hit vanyata rupam swarupena vivastiti. Liberation means obtaining one's constitutional position of service to the lotus feet of Sri Hari. So this is taking it even further. Getting away from the material, one has to establish one's relationship with the Lord. Otherwise, you're not liberated. Because whatever condition you're in, you'll just come back into present day, consciousness again. Right? So then, So then continuing, then the next point, in order to ensure that the correct appreciation of this knowledge, the complete whole, the personality of Godhead, has immense potencies, parasya shaktir vividhaya shuruyate. How Krishna is acting in different potencies is also explained in Bhagavad Gita. This phenomenal world, or material world, in which we are placed, is also complete by itself, because the 24 elements of which this material universe is a temporary manifestation, according to Shankya philosophy, are completely adjusted to produce complete resources, which are necessary for the maintenance and sustenance of this universe. There is nothing extraneous, nor is there anything needed. This manifestation has its own time, fixed by the energy of the Supreme Whole. And when its time is complete, these temporary manifestations will be annihilated by the complete arrangements of the complete. There is complete facility for the small complete units, namely the living entities, to realize the complete. And all sorts of incompleteness are experienced due to incomplete knowledge of the complete. So Bhagavad Gita is the complete knowledge of Vedic wisdom. So we're establishing now, if we want to say, is how the living entity is going to get out, is through this knowledge, through this proper understanding. Because by sentiment, we're going to be doing things that we shouldn't be doing. That's our natural tendency. Because for the living entity, intellectualizing is not actually that important. What's important is what taste you get out of any activity you do. That's why a living entity does it. So even if someone isn't intellectual, the reason that they are so enthusiastic is the taste they get from the intellectual process, right? The intelligence isn't the main interest of the living entity. It's the experiences gained from, you know, contact with the senses, sense objects, you know, and with other persons, right? So in other words, rasa is the main element. So the problem is sense, the Lord, He is rasa. He is complete. What's coming from is complete. Therefore, if you want to get an actual complete experience, then it has to be in connection with the complete. Otherwise, if it's not, it will be incomplete. And the jiva will not be satisfied. Right? It's that simple. Your experience is in connection with Krishna, there'll be some satisfaction. It's not in connection with Krishna, there'll be no satisfaction. You understand? And of that, some satisfaction in the material world means as good as it gets here. But more important is, because it's connected to the Supreme, that will be the part that actually is satisfying. Right? Because ultimately, the mundane, how much can it do? You know what I'm saying? How much can it do for us? Right? Very little. Okay, so now, the next point that's being established. Yeah. So when the living entity gives up this trying to lord it over the material energy and comes to the position of actually surrendering himself to Krishna, then the process becomes dynamic. And when he's established himself in that relationship, then he is liberated. He's no longer involved in the material manifestation. Yes.
Yeah, Prabhupada explains that there is two aspects of Maya, one the throwing aspect and the covering.
What is throwing and what's covering of Maya? Yes, it goes the coverings first, then throwing. Because if you're covered, then you don't notice the situation that you're in is different. You know, and generally is not as nice as your previous situation. But if you're covered, you don't notice it. Right? So once you're covered, then she can throw. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you're in the human form of life. So unless you're covered, how do you end up as a pig? Right? If you're not covered and you're human now and suddenly you're in a pig's body, it'll be a real disturbance. Right? But if you're already covered, then when you're in the pig's body, then you think, oh, how nice. You know, like that. Does that make sense? You know, I always wanted to put on a little weight, felt a little skinny. You know. Does that make sense? Yeah. So these are two. First she covers, so you don't understand that then she throws you from whatever position you're in. Okay? All Vedic knowledge is infallible. So now this is in order to ensure the correct appreciation of this knowledge, Srila Prabhupada next clarifies. Now we're getting into the process of understanding the Bhagavad Gita. All Vedic knowledge is infallible, and Hindus accept Vedic knowledge to be complete and infallible. For example, cow dung is the stool of an animal, and according to Smriti, or Vedic wisdom, if one touches the stool of an animal, he has to take bath to purify himself. But in the Vedic scriptures, cow dung is considered to be a purifying agent. One might consider this to be contradictory, but it is accepted because it is Vedic injunction. And indeed, by accepting this, one will not commit a mistake. Subsequently, it has been proved by modern science, by Dr. Lal Mahan Gosal, that cow dung contains all antiseptic properties. He has also analyzed the water of the Ganges out of curiosity. So Vedic knowledge is complete because it is above all doubts and mistakes. And the Bhagavad Gita is the essence of Vedic knowledge. Right? So that's the first thing, is to understand it is infallible. If that's accepted, then you can approach the Vedic literature and you can actually understand it. If you don't have this mentality, that's why it's being explained here, you will not be able to understand the Vedic literature. Right? And this doesn't say, you know, for you dirty, stinky, you know, karmis out there, unless you have this mentality, you'll never understand this book. It's a general comment. So whether one's a devotee or not a devotee, if one does not have faith in the Vedic literature that it's infallible, one will not understand it. It's that easy. Otherwise, why do you have many devotees? They've been around for a long time, and they can't understand the Vedic culture or certain aspects of the philosophy. Why? Because they don't have faith in those aspects. Other parts they may understand very well. They've applied them, they use them, but certain portions they can't understand. Why? Because they're not accepting the literature as infallible there. So it doesn't matter. They can go on studying for years, they'll never understand it. It's that simple. Because you have to remember, the Vedic literature is not just some book with some words, it's God Himself. It's His instructions. It's about Him. It's non-different from Him. Therefore, unless you have some appreciation of Krishna, you can't understand anything. Right? That's the first beginning of rasa, is appreciation. If you don't have that, you'll never get farther. You just can't. That's all. It's very simple, straightforward. And they're giving here, why would they give this example of the cow dung? Because whatever you have, when you have any kind of form that has a formula how it works, you know, a principle, then there's normal manifestations of it. You have a quality, you have a principle, its forms will be standard. But there will always be an exception. That's just the way energy works. Right? There's always exception. Right? The masculine principle, there's no exception. Right? But the feminine principle is always exception. Right? It's just the way it works. So that means that contradictory is non-different from feminine nature. Right? Just the way it is. So now, if that can't be understood, then don't even bother. So that's why the Vedic literatures then, they say what is standard and what is exception. Otherwise, how will you know? Because of the contradictory nature, you don't know where the contradiction is going to be. Right? So you have to learn it from authority. In other words, the source of this energy knows this energy. So it can tell you what is going on here. That's why then the Vedic literature has to be accepted as it is. That's what Prabhupada says, as it is. Not as you like it. That's Shakespeare. Right? As it is. That's Vedic. You understand? So, that's the principle. We may want to know more, question, understand how it's there, but there can never be that doubt. There can never be that, you know, that lack of faith that it's not true, it's not real. That will not get anyone anywhere. And it doesn't matter how smart you are. It's already pointed out. Right? So that in India means you're great Sanskrit scholars, you're great nyayists, you know, you're great logicians. They cannot understand it. And the technicalities they work with makes the Western academics pale, look like children. And then the biggest of those children, they get degrees called PhDs. And then they think they're going to understand. Right? So it's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. So that's why that one cannot use that as an approach. One cannot use it as an approach. One has to accept it. This doesn't mean that it's blind. It's already been explained. It's not blind. You're using your intelligence. But you're using your intelligence to figure out what's there. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole point. In other words, you use your intelligence to figure out what's already existing. Because what else are you going to do anyway? Right? What else are the academics and the scientists doing? Simply looking and observing what's already there. That's all they can do. So now, if you accept that it's there, and you accept that the person who made it says it works like this, then you get a lot farther. It's not so simple that, oh, well, then that takes all the fun out of it. That's when the fun begins. Because before that, it's a doubt, well, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. There's some attachments there, some misgivings there, from your own issues in your own mind. And that's all you have to work with. And that's what you'll be saying your whole life. You know? Right? That's what you say. It always comes back to the same issues. Same issues with authority. Right?
same issues with equality, you know, equal rights, equal opportunity, doubts about, you know, how much I should endeavor, because I don't see anything coming back at this present. You know, I'm endeavoring so hard, but I'm not becoming, you know, wealthy and famous and powerful. Right? So whatever it is that is important in your life, these things will get in the way. And these will be all you'll talk about. You take the same academic, even though he's so smart, he only talks the same thing. That's all. Nothing different. He's smart, different angles, but the same thing. Right? You know, you're Indian scholars, you know, God's impersonal, like that. And so from different angles, that's all they talk. Other things they may agree on, this one thing, that's their issue there. Right? Or it's not logical, or it's not this, or it's not that, or, you know what I'm saying? Anything they can't understand, then of course, is interpolation. That's, you know, that's their key catchphrase. They don't understand it, it's interpolation. If they understand it, oh, then it's fine. Does this make sense? So it's very important to understand this point, because this is the process for understanding the Bhagavad Gita. You don't accept, and this is the first point. Vedic knowledge is infallible, above all doubts and mistakes. Bhagavad Gita is the essence of all Vedic knowledge. Right? So if one doesn't accept that, one will not understand Bhagavad Gita. It's that simple. It's really that simple. Okay. Now next point. Vedic knowledge is not a question of research. We have to accept knowledge which comes down into cyclic succession. I probably never liked the term research. Right? Because it's already there. It means you can try to study and apply the knowledge that's already given. But it's not that you're researching through and finding where knowledge and putting things. No, you're trying to understand what's already present. Right? Because research means that you're trying to find out what is the truth and then present it. No, the truth is already there. It's a matter of studying the already existing truth. So it's not research as such. Vedic knowledge is not a question of research. Our research work is imperfect because we are researching things with imperfect senses. Therefore, the result of our research work is also imperfect. It cannot be perfect. We have to accept perfect knowledge which comes down, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, by the parampara, disciplic succession. We have to receive knowledge from the proper source in disciplic succession, beginning with the supreme spiritual master, the Lord himself, and handed down to a succession of spiritual masters. Arjuna, the student who took lessons from Lord Sri Krishna, accepts everything that he says without any cutting. Right? So in other words, without removing stuff. Oh, I like this part, I don't like this part. Right? This Ardha Kukuta Nyaya, which means the logic of half a hen. I like the back part, it lays the eggs, that's great. You know, very, you know, how you say, progressive, prosperous, like that, profitable. But the front half is a bit of a problem. It eats so much, like that. So therefore, we only accept the back half of the hen and not the front half. But then you don't get anything. Right? You take the whole chicken, otherwise you don't get any chicken. Right? That's the way it works. Okay. So here we can't pick and choose. We like this part, we don't like that part. No, it's just the way it is. If we don't understand, then try. Make that endeavor. Start with the basis that it's true, it's correct, and then how to understand it so that we can use it in our life. Right? That's the main thing. Because even understanding's not enough. So we were discussing last night, swadhyaya means that you hear knowledge. Then you have to contemplate it, right, to see how to apply it and try to understand the essence through that practice. If you're not doing that, you actually haven't understood it, because only through this do you get jnana. So that you've heard something, you've memorized something, that's not understanding. That's just the first stage. You need that, right? Like if you want to read, you have to have ABCs. But knowing ABCs doesn't mean you can read. So in the same way you've heard knowledge, it doesn't mean you understand. Understanding is tested when you apply it. If you can't apply the knowledge, you don't understand it. You know what I'm saying? Therefore, we apply it, and then what works is great. What doesn't work, we contemplate more. How, why it's not working, what's going on, why this. Then in this way, back and forth between contemplation and application like this, then we get an actual understanding. Make sense? And in this, to make it actually practical, we must be always looking for the essence. Because the essence is what makes it work. Right? That's what functions. Right? You have a big car, you know, if you're going to, you know, let's say the car is too heavy, then you still have to know the car to be able to lighten it. Right? You can take out the, you know, the spare tire, you know, the jack, you can take out the back seat. You know, there's so many things you can take, but if you take out the motor, then you'd probably find, definitely be lighter, definitely lighter. But, you know, unless you were in San Francisco and always going down to the wharf, it wouldn't be very useful, you know, like that. Does that make sense? So you have to know the essence, and you know it works by this motor. That means I could take off the body, the windshield, everything, as long as I have, you know, the four wheels and the motor and some way to make it move around, like basically the chassis, it could work. Because the chassis is the car. Everything else is just made, put on to make it look nice, right? Because the original cars were basically just the chassis, right? And then with time, when they started decorating them and everything. So now the modern car, very nice decorated chassis, right? But that's the main thing. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's knowledge. That's understanding. Getting to the essence, what actually works. Then you know how to apply it. So that means you hear the knowledge, you contemplate, try to understand the essence, apply it. And then in that application, we'll see if we've understood the essence or not. And even if we find we have, still, there's so many ways to apply that essence. Right? There's so many ways to apply it. Right? In automobile, you have the chassis is the essential point, but there's so many varieties of vehicles. They come up with so many different ways they put the chassis together. You understand? So that way, by time, place, and circumstance, if you know the essence, you can apply it. You don't know the essence, you can't apply it. So those persons who complain that the Vedic culture is not up to date and can't be applied to time, place, and circumstance mean they don't know the essence. They haven't understood the essence of the Vedic culture. Not only that, there's a good chance they don't even know what time, place, and circumstance means. It means applying the essence to the situation. Time, place, circumstance means that the details of your environment are going to change, but you're trying to accomplish the same thing. Therefore, if you understand the essence, you can always apply it. If you don't, all it is all they're doing is copying what somebody else does in a similar situation and trying to apply it. So they're not actually in knowledge because they don't know what they're doing. You understand? So they're saying time, place, and circumstance, but actually they have no idea what they're doing. Right? If the situation is right, it works. If it doesn't work, they also fail. Right? In the modern world, people aren't failing. No one fails in the world because everybody's up to date and knows exactly what's going on. Right? Most people are failing. Why? Because they don't know the essence. Someone knows the essence of business is making money. Is. Right? Someone who knows the essence of administration is successful in the political field. Right? Does that make sense? Someone who knows the essence of an art is applying it. Does that make sense? The artist, he can play in the Philharmonic. He can also play for his kid's birthday party. So he knows the essence. Right? So this is very important, this element of the essence. That's what's unique to the Vedic culture. No one else deals with it. Modern knowledge does not deal with the essence. They simply look at externals, find patterns among them, and then try to come up with a formula. But because of their imperfect senses, they never actually get to the essence. That's the problem. So unless you get from authority, then you apply it with your own intelligence, your own senses, then you'll get results. This is very, very important. Otherwise, then how do you base a lifestyle on lack of faith? Where will be the inspiration? What will you do? So that means you'll be ho-hum spiritually and ho-hum materially. What's the benefit? You know, if somebody feels very strongly that they have to be engaged in so many activities within the material environment, great, but you should be successful. Otherwise, what's the meaning? Right? You're not engaged in full devotional service. And for what? Just being like every other schnook around? I mean, is that what you... That's not smart. Right? The human being can do so much more. Does that make sense? So, yeah. One is not allowed to accept one portion of Bhagavad Gita and not another. No, we must accept Bhagavad Gita without interpretation, without deletion, and without our own whimsical participation in the matter. Right? Our own whimsical means what we want to gain from it, our own ideas and all that, our own issues. The Gita should be taken as the most perfect Vedic knowledge. Vedic knowledge is received from transcendental sources, because the first words were spoken by the Lord Himself. The words spoken by the Lord are called apurusheya, meaning they are not delivered by any person of the mundane world who is infected with four defects. A mundaner, one, is sure to commit mistakes. Two, is invariably illusioned. Three, must try to cheat others. And four, is endowed with imperfect senses. With these four imperfections, one cannot deliver perfect information of all-pervading knowledge. So that's, we see here again and again, Prabhupada is saying, this is Vedic knowledge. Right? This is it. Because the Vedas are... The Vedas are there. They've been divided into four. So these four Vedas, then they also then have four divisions. Each Veda has four divisions. You have the verses themselves that we will know as the Veda. Then you have a group of works that define how to use the various verses in your day to day life. You know, specifically as a grihastha. Then another, the third branch then will explain the esoterics of those verses. What's going on? What's the esoteric aspect of the rituals? You know, what is the connection between the physical and the spiritual? Right? In other words, it'll explain the metaphysics of the ritual. And then the fourth will explain the philosophy or the essence. What is actually going on? The Supreme Lord, the material energy, its workings, all those connections. So that's Vedanta. So the Upanishads are Vedanta. So the essence of all the Upanishads is the Bhagavad Gita. So it is Vedic knowledge. It's not a matter. It may be, its presentation may be ABCs, but it contains everything there is in Vedic knowledge. There isn't like more. It's all there. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay. Okay, now the next section. The Lord's words are accepted in this way. Then follows number five, the result of understanding Bhagavad Gita. Right, that's the fifth. Vedic knowledge is not imparted by such defective living entities. It was imparted unto the heart of Brahma, the first created living being. And Brahma, in his turn, disseminated this knowledge to his sons and disciples, as he originally received it from the Lord. The Lord is Purnam, all perfect. And there is no possibility of his becoming subjected to the laws of material nature. One should therefore be intelligent enough to know that the Lord is the only proprietor of everything in the universe. Aham sarvasya prabhavo. Matu sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajanti mam buddhavava samanvitaha. And that he is the original creator, the creator of Brahma. In the 11th chapter, the Lord is addressed as Prapita Maha, because Brahma is addressed as Pita Maha, the grandfather, and he is the creator of the grandfather. So no one should. Okay. Ran out of no one shoulds here. So no one should claim to be the proprietor of anything. One should accept only things set aside for him by the Lord as his quota for his maintenance. There are many examples given of how we are to utilize those things which are set aside for us by the Lord. This is also explained in Bhagavad Gita. In the beginning, Arjuna decided that he should not fight in the battle of Kurukshetra. This was his own decision. Arjuna told the Lord that it is not possible for him to enjoy the kingdom after killing his own kinsman. This decision was based on the body because he was thinking that the body was himself and that his bodily relations or expansions were his brothers, nephews, brothers-in-law, grandfathers, and so on. Therefore, he wanted to satisfy his bodily demands. Bhagavad Gita was spoken by the Lord just to change this view. And at the end, Arjuna decides to fight under the directions of the Lord. When he says, Karishye Vashanam Tava, I shall act according to your word. So in other words, we have our understandings. We have these material understandings. But then by coming in contact with the Lord's instructions, by trying to apply that in our life, then we're able to see beyond that. Because we're imperfect, but by the Lord's perfect instructions, then we can actually observe things perfectly. So then you come to this point, Karishye Vachanam Tava, that I shall act according to your word. We surrender to Krishna. We accept that knowledge that he's giving us. You know, that this is what we can do. Does that make sense? So this is now the result. When you understand, if you understand, in other words, result of understanding, so that means if you're not surrendering, you're not understanding. And to that degree you're surrendering, is to that degree you're understanding. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why then having that faith in the Vedic literatures, in the Lord's direction, then applying that to the teachings of the Gita, then we'll be able to apply that. Then we'll be very will be nicely situated there. Yeah. Okay, so that's the point. That's the first point. A, at the end of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna says, Karishye Vachanam Tava, I shall act according to your word. Then, B, like Arjuna, if we properly utilize the instructions of Bhagavad Gita, then our whole life becomes purified, and ultimately we'll be able to reach the destination which is beyond this material sky. Yat gatva nani vartante tad dhamma paramam mama. So it's like you'll be able to use it, you'll be able to get beyond. Because we've already talked before that liberation means getting out of the material world, but establishing yourself in a relationship with the Lord. Right? So that means you have to get out of the material world, but you have to establish your relationship with the Lord. So that means there must be that devotional, because that's the only way you're going to understand. So by proper understanding, then one will be able to engage in devotional service. That will then bring one to the ultimate goal. So that's the result. It means you'll surrender by following that, by applying that proper surrender, then you'll go back to Godhead. Right? That's what you can get. Otherwise, one can stay here, be very worried about one's position, you know, pontificate on so many things, and remain, right? Because one's intelligence is actually mundane. Right? Mundane intelligence keeps one in the mundane world. Spiritual intelligence takes you to the spiritual world. Spiritual intelligence is based on faith. Mundane intelligence is based on critical analysis. You know? Sorry to say, but it's not, it may not be pleasant, but the point is if we're actually talking about truth and all this and that, then we have to deal in that way. It actually has to be presented in that way. In this world, men are not meant for quarreling like cats and dogs. Men must be intelligent to realize the importance of human life and refuse to act like ordinary animals. A human being should realize the aim of his life. And this direction is given in all Vedic literatures. And the essence is given in Bhagavad Gita. Right? We're trying to find the essence, so Bhagavad Gita is the essence. So if you understand the Gita, then when you read any other Vedic literature, you'll actually understand what it's talking about. Because you've understood the essence. So we see in Gita, he's giving the essence of the literatures. How does karma work? How means the activity is basically you have karma, jnana, and yoga in the material world, right? That's all we ever talk about, right? We don't talk about something else. So now how does karma, jnana, and yoga get connected to the Lord? Right? So that's the essence. Right? Because everything you're doing to do, you're going to do an activity, it gives a result. You're going to intellectualize on something, try to analyze it, understand it, like that. Or you're going to be engaged in some way of trying to, how do you say? Yeah, elevate yourself through the purification of the mind, focusing the mind on something more, how do you say, important than ourselves, right? So then, the essence of that is activities that give results. The activities are connected to the results, the Lord, the results of the Lord. The knowledge is about the Lord, what your understanding is the Lord. That focus of the mind then is on the Lord, so therefore it gives the perfection of being always absorbed in the Lord. Right? So it gives that satisfaction. This is the essence. So we see, and who that Lord is, that we are performing our activities for. We're trying to understand. We're trying to appreciate. Right? Then that is explained in the middle six chapters. Then the mechanics of how the karma, jnana, and yoga work. Right? In other words, all the, you know, the connection with the physical, metaphysical, how is the mechanics of that functioning? You know, the essential points. That's Bhagavad Gita. How do you get better than that? Your three activities of the material world, karma, jnana, and yoga, how to connect them to the Lord, who's the Lord, and what is the mechanics of that? Does that make sense? So is there anything left out? Right? Your grandmother's, you know, dry cleaning or something. Right? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? It's Tuesday morning, the garbage has to be taken out. Right. Do we miss something? No. Walk the dog. Okay, walk the dog. Okay. So, understand is that there's not a whole lot left out in the Bhagavad Gita. It's all covered. It's the essence. Then from there, it can expand. You can get more and more understanding of that. But the essence is already there. That's the thing about the Vedic. It starts from the essence and expands. It's not that it's linear, that one after another, and then as you move on, the previous thing you don't bother with. Right? It's just like when Prabhupada explains you know, the degrees, Bhakti Shastri, he mentions the books, and Bhakti Vaibhav, then he says it's the study of the same books as Bhakti Shastri and the study of the Bhagavatam, right? And then Bhakti Vedanta is the study of those first two plus that. Right, so it's a continuation. It's a development. It's not there's this, then this, then this, then this. No. In other words, now you've seen Bhagavad Gita, when you study Bhagavatam, that knowledge of the Gita now should be seen in light of the Bhagavatam. Right? What's in the first canon should be seen in that when you're studying the second, you see that in there. And then the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you see what's in the Bhagavatam. Does that make sense? So it's all connected. It's not that. Okay, been there, done that, now move on to something else. No, it's always the essence. It's always there. All the great acharyas, there's never a time when they say, oh, we're done with Gita, right? Now it's time to get into the big stuff. No, it's never given up. Vedic literature is meant for human beings, not for animals. Animals can kill other living animals, and there is no question of sin on their part. But if a man kills an animal for the satisfaction of his uncontrolled taste, he must be responsible for breaking the laws of nature. In the Bhagavad Gita is clearly explained that there are three kinds of activities according to the different modes of nature. The activities of goodness, of passion, and of ignorance. Similarly, there are three kinds of edibles. Also, edibles and goodness, passion, and ignorance. All of this is clearly described. And if we properly utilize the instructions of Bhagavad Gita, then our whole life will become purified, and ultimately we will be able to reach the destination which is beyond this material sky. Yad gatva nadivartante tad dhamma paramama. Okay. So now we take this, we can use it. That's a very important, you know, like that. Then next point. That destination is called the Sanatana sky, the eternal spiritual sky. In this material world, we find that everything is temporary. It comes into being, stays for some time, produces some byproducts, dwindles, and then vanishes. That is the law of the material world. Whether we use as an example this body or a piece of fruit or anything, right, it doesn't matter what we're using. It's all the same. This body or a piece of fruit. That is the law of the material world. Okay. But beyond this temporary world, there is another world of which we have information. That world consists of another nature, which is Sanatana, eternal. The Jiva is also described as Sanatana, eternal. And the Lord is also described as Sanatana in the 11th chapter. We have an intimate relationship with the Lord. And because we are all qualitatively one, the Sanatana Dharma, or the sky, the Sanatana, spiritual, supreme personality, and the Sanatana, living entities. The whole purpose of Gita is to revive our Sanatana occupation, or Sanatana Dharma, which is the eternal occupation of the living entity. We are temporarily engaged in different activities, but all of these activities can be purified when we give up all these temporary activities. And take up the activities which are prescribed by the Supreme Lord. That is called our pure life. Now, in that, by yama and niyama, the important thing is what is favorable, what's not favorable. In other words, what's favorable, that is accepted, that is cultivated. What's not favorable, that's removed. So that may take the form of that favorable and unfavorable may be that a form that you use is not very usable. Right? Means your, let's say, food. And so certain kinds of food may not be very favorable. Right? But at the same time, as even you have favorable food, what makes it favorable is its connection to the Lord. So in other words, favorable and unfavorable means, can you connect it to the Lord? Is it connected to the Lord? Right? That's what makes it in that condition. So that's what one's trying to do. So the material, the activities of this world are temporary because the material world is temporary. But if that activity can be connected to the Lord, then it doesn't give temporary results. It gives eternal results. Right? Now, the result is that purification, that upliftment of consciousness, that situation in Krishna consciousness. That's the actual result. Right? Like it says, we'll go back to Godhead. So the medium through which that is gained is still temporary. Right? We do an activity, we do our job, we do whatever it is, we get money. Those things, the specific manifestation that we have, will be temporary. But the results, devotional results, we'll have gotten from it by engaging in Krishna's service, that's eternal. Right? So then for the devotee, it's just a matter of, it's inconvenient in the material world because of that temporariness, while in the spiritual world there's no inconvenience because it's also eternal. Right, the paraphernalia you're using, the activities, everything's eternal. The results are eternal. Here, then, the paraphernalia that's being used, the results that come from it on the material platform are all temporary. But the spiritual results are eternal. Right? So it's just a matter of putting up with the material world until, you know, we get out of here. That's all. It's just more inconvenient. That's all. Does this make sense? That's what you're doing. You who are eternal are connected with the Supreme Lord who is eternal, right? In eternal activities, Sanatana Dharma, of devotional service. And then if that's going on, then wherever one is, then that place is also giving your eternal results. Right? So that's how one works within the one works within the material world.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Janyatai Gaura Premanandi.